Okay, welcome along to Under Construction. I'm Donico Callan and I'm delighted to be joined by our host, Pat Moore. Pat, how are you getting on?
Oh, great, Donico, as usual.
Yeah.
Everything good?
Everything's good, yeah. Pat, I'm still blagging away, which you'll be glad to hear.
You're still spoofing again.
Absolutely, still spoofing.
That's one thing we have in common, so that's good.
There's the two of us in
it. Yeah, geez.
I'm looking forward to this pod, Pat, purely because we're chatting about sustainability, of course. We've chatted about it before. But looking forward, and especially in the construction industry, you know, ways forward and how we can see ourselves in time and looking at everything sustainable in the future.
Yeah, look, I think sustainability has become a major part of construction, particularly the last number of years, and people have been more conscious about how they're building houses and retrofitting. So we're very lucky to be joined by two super guests who can give us their take on the whole sustainability piece.
Absolutely.
So do you want to kick
on? Yeah, you're not wrong. I'm delighted to be joined by fellow Corkonian, award-winning and best-selling author and a hands-on portfolio developer. Incredible. Laura DeBarra, you are so welcome. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Laura, I'm a bit of a fangirl here. Absolutely love the book.
An icon. Thank you. Thank you.
You must be so proud of it, though.
Yeah, I can't believe the success it had. Well, I think I was in a bit of disbelief at the start, whereas now when you meet the people who read the book, you realise that there was just loads of us out there. We just didn't have something there for us to learn from.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, which is brilliant. We'll get into it all. It's very rare, Pat, on the podcast that we ask someone back. I know your phone has been tormented by TJ Reid and Lee Chin always asking to come back on, but
absolutely,
we only take Best in show. And that's where we're delighted that David Shell joins us again. David, thanks so much for rejoining us.
Thanks very much, Donico. Yeah. Nice to be here again.
We chatted about your retro...
Sorry, before you go on there. Two dubs, so...
Keep this thing going.
So we're having a fight afterwards.
We're going to have to have a fight.
Okay, very good.
Grand.
Throw in one is bad.
Two is... So, no... Come on, boy.
There you go. Yeah. There we won't be too bad. David, you might just bring us up to speed again with yourretrofit.ie.
So, yeah, so we've built a platform that's really aimed at trying to demystify the process for the homeowner, making use of the BER database. And if someone doesn't have a BER, we've got a predictive model based on them answering a few questions for us. And we're able to give you a full insight into what the deficiencies of your home might be, what the options in terms of how you could upgrade that and make it more energy efficient would be, what the costs might be involved in that, and where we can open up potential savings for you. And we have a great initiative with Chadwicks whereby you can get an in-store consultation with the retrofit experts where they'll look at the data from your house based on our software and be able to guide you in what kind of options and the trade-offs across different options, things like that. And all of which is free to the consumer. You get the our site for free and the consultation in-store for free as well.
Brilliant stuff, David.
Laura, when I'm going through it, everything you've done, like there's always a little bit of an arrogance about being from Cork, but you deserve every bit of it. Fashion designer, social media superstar, a property management portfolio under an author, a blogger, a DIY specialist. You must be incredibly
wrecked.
Proud, erect and knackered from it, but incredibly proud of all you've achieved so far.
Yeah, I think like, because I'm Irish, I obviously have imposter syndrome like to the max. And because I'm a woman as well, I have it even more. I think there's that thing where like I feel like to be taken seriously, I almost need to be doing more. I find that a lot in my industry. So now I've gotten to the nice stage where I only do the things I want to do, you know,
brilliant.
Which is really nice. It hasn't been like that forever. Mm. But it's just now I get to actually just do things that I'm really interested in and passionate about.
But Laura, you've set the blaze for everyone else. You've probably stepped into an industry that people were, you know, maybe dabbling into, but you've actually gone full headed into it and shown the way for so many.
Yeah, I think why it got so well received by people was that it was genuine. I think you see a lot, like I didn't start out as like an influencer. I don't make any money on my Instagram account at all, much to my husband's disgust. He's
okay.
Like, when are we cashing in on this,
okay,
please? So I'm just putting up tips that I find throughout the working day. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize that or this or whatever. And I just think that like it's people always will jump on that bandwagon and then start to cash in on it and bring consumption into it and no sustainability. So I've even found myself putting back on Instagram now. I only put things up if I feel that the person who's not into like the fast interiors, they're not going to use it. It's for people who genuinely want to do a repair and learn how to do it. You know, I'm all about learning how the home works because my parents' generation don't know about the house I live in because it's different.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know about smart homes. They don't know about like retrofitting. They don't know about the materials and the of things in our homes, or like, we live completely differently. I don't come home and like feed like six kids in the evening. You know what I mean? Our furniture is different. How we buy our furniture is different. So I think there was a relatability around millennials, because I always say we were the generation who have been preparing for a future that never came for us. So instead, we're having to learn how to rent and how to look after projects ourselves to save money. And like, it's a different vibe now, you know. But people, there has been a nice flow through Ireland since, which I think is stunning, because not everyone wants to hear one voice. You want to hear loads of voices.
Absolutely. You know? And can you give us some insight into the feedback you've received as someone that's probably shone the light for the way forward?
You're very kind. Thank you.
Here we go. Come on, stop it.
I'm waiting for the love from
Pat. Don't tell me your husband's from Cork as well, because that's going to be
cheaper. He is.
Oh, sweet Lord.
That's where the money thing came from. Miserable. The whole
no, but it's true. You have set the trend in an awful lot. Even trademarking Shiai, you know?
Yeah, I was not going to let a man have that. Like, my whole thing about Shiai is I don't think there is a gender in DIY. Yeah. And I was finding it really difficult at work, because my boss basically was like, quite the budget man, and he needed me to, I was doing the repairs because it was cheaper than calling someone out, or like people might cancel and tenants would need something fixed and I would feel awful if we could just fix it ourselves and we weren't doing it. And as I was learning, they'd always lead me to like the pink tools, and if you've ever used the pink tools, they're crap quality. They're not for an expert DIY person. I like to buy things that last a long time. So immediately, like, I've never met a tool that is gender specific. I've never met a tool that's like, insert Willy here to use. You know what I mean? Okay, so like, why are we, like, you know what I mean? If tools aren't like gender specific, why is DIY? And then also, when people would be teaching me DIY, it would be a bit condescending.
Yeah.
And then friends of mine, male friends of mine, that are like, oh, I don't feel like I can get involved in DIY because I feel like I have to be an expert to be in on it, you know? Yeah. So they're like, oh, I don't do anything. I just do task rabbit and I let someone else do it because I feel embarrassed going into a shop. So I was like, no, we need DIY. And I think like trademarking was just so it couldn't be used to like on a pink tool toolkit, you know? And it's important for me that everyone has a seat at the table with DIY. Everybody, like no matter what your gender is or your skill level, it's all about taking your time and enjoying it and understanding what's going on and knowing when to call experts and get advice. You know, it's not necessarily about like doing all the things yourself. It's more about understanding what your home needs from you to make your home last longer.
Yeah.
You know?
But I could imagine that people are so proud that you have, you know, because you're not on your own in it. And we can see that by the amount of following, by your incredible books.
Yeah, people have been, they've been really supportive from the point of view of like, I think like the book has, they've been very honest with how the book has helped them. Anyone from like a single mom who's like, I can't afford to get stuff done and I feel under loads of pressure to have the house working and not have to call the dad. Yeah. Like I get a lot of feedback like that. I get a lot of feedback from men who are like, I now can go into a store and be like, I need a 16 ounce this or I need that, or they know what they're talking about when they go in and they feel like they feel a bit more comfortable. And I think a lot of people have said they've just been able to make their house more about them. And of course, reduce consumption. Yeah. Like they don't feel like they have to buy all the time. Instead, they set the house up for their lifestyle.
Because David, we were chatting about it the last time we spoke, but education is the key in it. And it's something you do really well as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that we first identified, is that people don't know where to start. They're confused, a bit like you said there, of, you know, I can't have an informed conversation with the trade or anything of that kind. So the idea here is to try and enable them to make use of the data that they should be able to have in their own home in an understandable manner, so that they can actually try and figure out what could make the home more comfortable and more cost effective for them.
Incredible.
As well.
Incredible. A trustworthy source.
Yeah. David, have you found we're making a push away from do it for me and going back to exactly what Laura's at, you know, getting upskilled, getting the knowledge and, you know, using incredible tools like your own to
get
up the speed.
Maybe it's a bit like fashion trends or whatever. As you said, the millennials have definitely probably reverse the cart a little bit in the sense that they aren't as hands-on maybe as previous generations. But I think now where people are much more conscious and trying to be more sustainable, it's a real opportunity to actually capitalize on that and put the capability in the hands of our generation and future generations to actually take their own steps. And whether that's they actually get the hands dirty and go and get the go into the Chadwick store themselves and get the material and undertake the work is one thing, but at least being able to have the capability to have the informed conversation with those who are.
I think social media has played a major part in that. Just like you talk about the pros and cons of social media, certainly the pro is you go on Instagram, you can see all the projects that are being undertaken, and regardless whether it's male or female, that you can see that no project is nearly too big or too small. If you have a crack, so it'd be interesting, Laura, your part, like you start, where did you start off really and how did you progress to where you are today in relation to the projects? Because we've had a couple of lady tradespeople in the show before. And it is an industry which is, it's difficult as a female to come into us, but as an industry ourselves, we're trying to attract more and more people into it, female and male, you know, all the time. And it's the fact that you've taken on so many projects, it does, whether you're a female or not, you're looking at go, geez, if, you know, this is, I can do this. So where did you start and how did you progress to the...
So I took over, like I basically started buying properties for investors, but my whole thing, the reason I get like kind of like blocked off by investors is I'm people first. Sustainability, like it's, they want to make a difference with their money. And then, so they obviously want to tick the boxes they want to tick, but then I'll only work for people who are nice to people, nice to their tenants, like make money fairly, basically, even though you could say no money is made fairly, but anyway. So I started looking after rentals and then I just thought it was crazy how the estate agents weren't looking after, weren't responding, weren't repairing. So I started fixing the things myself or figuring out, like, why does the washing machine work that way? When I have that repair, what do I do? And then when engineers were coming out, I was like learning everything. And then I started making these booklets for tenants. And then that's what essentially became Gaff Goddess. So that I could take a day off, I'd be like, if someone's washing machine breaks, like, I can actually like send this out and I can just be like, when I get that, I had 60 tenants at one stage by myself. I told you my boss was cheap. So like, then I'd have to like answer everything. And then I started working for myself during lockdowns. And because I found the rental side of it really stressful. I didn't like what landlords were doing to tenants around. I have enough skills. If I'm not feeling something's ethical or sound, I'll just get out of it. So I started working for people trying to sell their properties and trying to rent out their properties and make them nicer because they don't think about the person in the space. So I started learning how to paint like a professional, like siliconing, tiling, repainting kitchen cupboards, like the heavier kind of bits and pieces. And then the investors I work for now are just like, can you just not work with anybody else? So now I kind of like unflip properties now. I find like iconic blocks in London that were just wonderful, beautiful spaces. And they sell it, like when you go to somewhere like New York, they keep everything for as long as possible.
Yeah.
It's so, you go into the bathroom and you're like, this is so old. Whereas in London, there's a tendency, and Ireland too, to pull out and put in something really new, but it mightn't last as long. Nothing made now is as nice, I think. So you're better off like retrofitting, even from the point of view of aesthetics, like aside from the fact that you're going to have a warmer home that's like costs less to run. So that's what I do now. It's a lot of work because you have to find these properties. And also I don't buy anything that a first time buyer can buy because I just feel like I rent and I would batter someone if they were coming into my market and taking a property away from me. So we do ones that were the lease, they aren't mortgageable because you can't get, the lease is too short or it's in a probate or something wrong with something. So we have time and no emotion, we can do it, and then we make them into the beautiful spaces, and then it's nearly always women that buy the properties then on their own.
It's an interesting point you're talking about, even from your previous roles where the investors are coming in and looking at large blocks of apartments or property stacks that they have. And what we've seen even in our world now is there's a much stronger focus for the investors on them investing in green projects. And so they might have a property portfolio of a bunch of apartments in a certain area in property cities, and that they have a bit of pressure from their overall investment strategy to take some sort of green initiative and maybe to retrofit the buildings in one go. Or B, there's actually, they see it as a commercial opportunity as well because of the grants that the SEI are providing, that they can make they can turn those properties into much more kind of rentable properties that they're better on the energy bills and the consumption and comfort level for potential tenants. But it is an area of increased focus for sure in that industry now.
Definitely.
Where they've got to satisfy certain targets of how they're investing their funds, if they're big funds in particular, with lots of investors, or likewise, there's an opportunity in it for them. But similarly, for the kind of mass market you have now, the housing bodies are really kind of focusing in on what does the property stack look like. Is it really detrimental actually for people who might be on social housing where they've got high energy bills, and that's the demographic of people who can least afford it.
It's
great that social conscience now exists, isn't it? Laura, I might come back to something you mentioned. You were saying you were making up little handbooks for the but tell us more about the Gaff Goddess. How from that point where someone was just taking it to realise how to work the washing machine, turning it into a best-selling book?
I think I understood the language that needed to be spoken, because if I was just saying, like, I was fine, I'd have to read a load of different things to learn about this washing machine. I'm like, this is really simple.
Yeah, okay.
Like, water comes in here, it comes through here, that's why you get mold there, it goes through there, agitation cleans your clothes, it goes out through that filter. Of course, like, if you can clear each stage during a repair, it becomes pretty obvious what's going on. And then I just became obsessed with applying, like, white goods and stuff. Like, I have I order, like, expensive manuals online on eBay just to, like, read them, just to be like, what does a £1,000 fridge do? Like, I love them. So the language that you use when you're speaking to people about it really helps. Like, yeah. I always say Gaff Goddess is like Barbra Streisand and Cher having, like, a cocktail together and talking about a fridge, you know, because people, there's that space, you know, if you kind of say, look at her, open up her drawer, people are just going to be like, I'm not afraid of this. How am I afraid of, like, a washing machine that somebody's calling fabulous, you know? This no longer becomes baffling, because there's loads of parts of the washing machine you shouldn't touch. That's for an engineer. Mm. But the ones you should know shouldn't be scary.
Yeah.
I just pictured Dunica and Paula Gallen talking about a microwave there.
There you go.
I'd be happy out with that.
Yes, the fella couldn't paint a table. Yeah.
Right, washing machine.
Washing machine, and that would be way away.
But that is a true point. There is bits that are outside our control that you should hand over to the professionals.
Yeah.
But there is so much. And I suppose from my own sense, you kind of get the feel that that's off limits to you. And what we're learning now is it's not. It's, you know, having a go and educating yourself is probably the thing.
Yeah.
Like one of the things that's clear, even in the retrofit space, is, of course, we've got to have approved fitters for various things. But, you know, there has been not malpractice, but mispractice, let's say, in the past, where some of the most recent technology, like a heat pump, is put into a house that just isn't ready for a house. And, you know, hopefully with your retrofit.ie, that kind of information in the hands of the homeowner, they might realize themselves, because we're going to flag quite clearly when the house is not ready or when it is ready. So even if there are going to be pockets where you still need the expert, it's having that capability of the understanding where you got to place the trust in them for a certain aspect of the house, but you know certain kind of delimiting factors that have to be satisfied first.
Mm-hmm. It'll meet standard and get your certs and everything. Because a lot of people don't realise that with retrofitting, you, like, and with most DIY, you can kind of, like, look at it like a menu of, I'll do that, I'll leave that to an expert. That has to be certified. It's like when a gas cert, you know, you're not going to do that yourself.
Yeah.
So I think when you're able to look at something like that and go, a lot of people are surprised how little retrofitting can cost, like the big changes. They usually think it's like hundreds of thousands.
Exactly,
instead you can say, well, winter's coming, I'm going to do that during that time.
Yeah.
Do this during, you know what I mean? You can break it all down. But, like, that's your, I think what you do is just so key for the consumer.
There is misinformation about, you know, or misconception, I would say, of each retrofit's going to cost 100,000. Mm-hmm. We talked about that with Chadwick's, and that was part of us developing the relationship, is you can actually have a kind of passporting approach where you start with the fabric and quick and simple packages. One of the packages we have on the site where it's just the non-invasive kind of best grants, best bang for buck kind of thing to start the process. And that's one of the ideas, is to bring that information to people that it's not necessarily 100,000 for your house to do something progressive.
Absolutely. You can start with a small offer, as mentioned before, about just even insulating the attic good start. And it's nearly she DIY or it's DIY, can be both. But in relation to the UK then, how do you find that market in the UK? And is there a contrast between that and Ireland when you're...
Well, I work with the, I did for a while at UK government until, like, Twitter, literally, it's, you know, the way they all hate, like, the Tories and everything over there. They were calling me a stooge. I was like, I didn't sign up to this. Like, I was just having a bit of fun and showing people how to turn down their thermostat. Like, excuse me, like, in your Arsenal jersey. Like, are you joking me? So, honestly, I was getting rinsed by lads in, like, flares on Twitter. I was like, I'm not doing this. Like, no, thank you. Like, you have a football match to watch. So, I only did a couple. I just did one, like, video for them, but I did a lot of work with them outside of, because I usually work with brands offline. It's just more interesting, and they have this, like, grant scheme basically where you can apply to retrofit your house. And what you do is you go onto the government website. They try to do what you do, but not as fabulously, not as easy, and not as consumer. For you've seen it, right? It's literally like the dinosaurs are pressing the buttons for you. So, like, but it's
for now.
It's
for now.
Yeah. Well, you need to go over and get a contract in there with it. You need to slide in, and then a lot of people feel, first of all, it's being presented by the government, so a lot of people aren't trusting it. And then also, it's not as easy to, like, it's not as consumer friendly to move around it and get it done. And then a lot of people are kind of saying, like, there, it's like ex local properties and stuff that it should be done for them. Mm. But it's great that it's there. The regulation in the UK in property is so much more intense than here. Like, renters are so protected and the homeowners are so protected in comparison to other countries. Like, that can be a good and a bad thing, though.
Yeah, so. Of course. Retrofitting, of course, it's a trend that we're seeing now and we're all excited to get involved in it. From my industry, in a past life, sport can be full of fads, and trying to keep an eye on what actually is a fad, you know, just for this snapshot in time. And in the end, it won't make a lasting difference, really. But we're probably seeing that a little bit with fast interiors, and we're seeing it with fast fashion. Laura, you might take us through that, what we're seeing in the interior side of it.
So I worked for a high street supplier in fashion previously, so I've seen this firsthand already, and we had started going into interiors. So immediately you want your factories to produce at a lower cost because the customer doesn't want to use it as much anymore. And that's when you're like, this is going to be a disaster. If you look into any major high street store at the moment, like H&M, Zara, they all have a home section. Mm. If you think that any of that's being made very, very ethically, like, you've got to be kidding. Like, I've been in those factories and a lot of them can be quite good, but not the ones that are a pound. And the problem with that is it's not what it does in your home, it's what it does after it leaves your home. You know, it's the same with clothing. Like, as in, it's all well and good buying something to wear once, but like, if you're not looking after it, or you know, or it's not made well, you're just creating, like, it goes somewhere, you know. So learning how to buy, like, Decor Galore, my second book, is all about how to spot quality and how to buy and how to know that if tiles are non-slip, and how to figure out kitchen counters and the different materials within the homes, and even down to carpets, like how to buy paint so that there's less waste.
Yeah.
And then you kind of go in as that bad bitch, just being like, do you know what? I want this type of tile because I know it's going to be used in a wet area, because you can end up wasting. And what fast interiors does is it takes down all the quality and it just delivers on aesthetic. And it's just not okay. Like, I shop almost every single day for work, and it's just the pits now. Like, I would have been able to go into some high street stores and pick up a few bits, and now it's just, it's not, we're getting to the stage where it's hard to buy well.
Wow.
You know, so buying secondhand is, like, in furniture now, is just the way to go, you know. And that's why retrofitting, I don't think it'll be a fad. There'll be fads naturally within retrofitting. Yeah, course, you know what
absolutely.
I mean?
Like,
it'll have their own micro trends.
Yeah.
There's trends and there's fads, and trends can be stunning. Fads are usually, because people don't understand enough about it.
Yeah.
But I think with retrofitting, like, you're actually making something that was made first day of better quality better.
And David, we've seen that as Irish people, we're really good at that. You know, it may be something we've stared away with and trying to chase other things, but we make really well. We produce really well. We're good at what we do, our trades.
Yeah, I mean, we've been incredible export country, obviously, in history. So, I mean, the opportunity for us to take what, you know, generations before have put in stone in terms of our building infrastructure is huge. And it's going to evolve. As I said, it's going to be trends or fads within retrofit. But I think for sure, retrofit is something that, from a global perspective, we know the EU legislation has been designed around making sure that we can take steps forward. A bit like in the car space, yes, electric vehicles the way at the moment. Might it be some sort of synthetic fuel? It might be. But there'll be something there that replaces the kind of current infrastructure. And we're going to see the same in the building. Architecture has to be that. But you're right, Donica. I mean, the opportunity in Ireland, there's some great, obviously, construction that is taking place in this country, and we are obviously in a housing crisis as well, and making use of what we have in a much more effective and efficient manner is going to be really important for achieving what we have to.
Just on it, our sustainability targets for 2023, how can the likes of Chadwicks help with achieving those goals?
Yeah, so I mean, that was for us what we looked at. The kind of genesis of EuroRetrofit.ie was us looking at the Climate Action Plan and what the government has signed up to. They signed up to really ambitious targets, and the numbers that they're looking to hit, given the volumes that have taken place so far in the building stock, are very ambitious. But if you look at what Chadwicks are now taking the step forward with our platform to do, and to give the homeowner a place that they can come and get some advice face to face, in person, with information about their house in hand, in a kind of, it's an impartial viewpoint. Our software is kind of impartial. It's not saying you need to go with a heat pump or you need to do this, that, and the other. And the Chadwicks approach is the same, because again, it's not necessarily a direct to consumer purchase. It can be in certain instances, but it's a more impartial, holistic view on the house. Like, that is a huge step forward. There's nothing like that in the country at the moment. To be able to, you know, within an hour's drive of pretty much everyone in the country, you can go to a Chadwicks branch and be able to get that insight. That is a really progressive step forward. I think that was something that attracted us to the partnership with Chadwicks, is kind of our belief in Chadwicks' viewpoint on trying to do something progressive in this regard. And I think, you know, Patrick sits on the board of the Irish Green Building Council and has a real kind of passion about this, which came through for us.
It's important that we're changing that way now, Laura, isn't it? That, like, it is, everyone has that moral compass to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. It's actually easier a lot of times to do the right thing, like on your mind, pocket, everything, you know, like it just takes a bit more research, I think. Yeah. And I think then when you start to really kind of get into sustainability in the home, it becomes really lovely, because things that that's what I always think, it's kind of, you're sitting around things that have had another life before, or you've improved something. It's like, you know, nothing can beat that pair of jeans that you've done a quick stitch on. And it's kind of like, it's just a nicer way to live, you know.
Yeah.
And you can't really be in denial about this anymore. Like, it's, we've created an absolute mess when it comes to sustainability. And what you used to be before was that, you know, I would only be able to talk about sustainability if I was in like a hemp dress, yeah, no makeup, yeah, and I was vegan, right? I would, yeah, no one would listen to me. Whereas what I always try and say to people is, like, it is impossible to be 100% perfectly sustainable. So don't just walk away from it because you can't commit fully to it. Mm. You know, like even my job, I can't commit fully to it. I have to buy things every day for work. But I'm able to understand where the massive differences are made by small changes. And I think that's the key with sustainability now, is there's a lot of judgment where people are like, oh, she says she's sustainable and I saw her with a plastic water bottle. And it's kind of, yeah, like, you know, you don't know if she was with her kid and you had to stop somewhere. You know, yeah, it's about being kind to other people with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And not being so judgmental.
No, or not being so like up on your high horse about it. Like, not everyone can afford to be sustainable or have the accessibility to be sustainable, mm-hmm, especially with clothing. Like, someone could be a size that isn't catered for within sustainable brands. And then that means we're going to judge that person. Absolutely not. Someone could live in a house where they can't afford to get the big jobs done and do small, cheaper jobs all the time. It's just about kind of having an awareness that, like, any little movement towards it is good.
Yeah. I think, like, in if you look at society as a whole, if you've got individuals being conscientious in their own right, as you say, Laura, you've got to make purchases each day for work. But if you have commercial or corporate entities coming at it from the top down also, that really can help. Like, I mean, one of the things we talked about within Prime 19 originally about this was, you know, we all have this desire to try and be more sustainable, make a contribution. Our thing is analytics and crunching numbers, essentially. And, you know, I might put all my plastic in the green bin, goes out in the road and the neighbors are throwing their apple core and stuff in the green bin and then in their green bin. And so what I've done is wasted. And it's like, how could we use analytics, our own kind of capability and skill set, to bring it to sustainability in a wider, have a kind of wider reach? I think if you have that twin track of people trying their best, no one's ever going to be perfect on an individual consumer level, plus the corporate entities like Chadwicks or like ourselves trying to get into the space and come at it from the top down.
Yeah, look, I think that's where it is. I do think you've got to, you start off, I mean, the home, certainly we can get our homes where we need them to be. I mean, we've been recycling for many, many years now, probably not 100% right, but we have been trying. Most people are conscious of trying to be as good as they can be. You're never going to be 100%, Laura, you're 100%. I think if we can get the houses moved on to, from the home, from the fabrication piece, the next piece will lead on to the next part. You know, people will become more conscious. You mentioned secondhand clothes, secondhand furniture, secondhand jewellery. I mean, we had that, I remember during the 80s, you wouldn't remember that, you're too young.
No.
During the 80s, it was a big trend.
Wait, did you just do that to me? Because I'd remember. I remember the 80s
going in and buying jackets and jeans.
I don't remember the 80s.
Secondhand stores, you don't know either.
Yeah.
That's like a way to dress now. It's like this is probably like about like 20, 30 years old. It's like, it's just way better made. So if you are going to go buy, let's say, a sofa, look at pre-owned sofas. They'll probably have a timber frame, you know what I mean? They're not going to have like the MDF or like the rubber kind of webbing in it that's going to wear out after a couple of years.
And if it's out, it's only because there's been no money in the back of the sofa. That'd be well gone.
I was thinking about my own gear. I actually robbed this jumper off Tommy Bow.
So it's pre-loved.
There you go, pre-loved. And he's
in
looking everywhere for it.
Yeah. Now we come looking for me, see if I have it.
David, I'm going to come to you versus new versus old in terms of, if you're lucky enough to buy a house at the moment, we were chatting before about the BRRRR rating, but just that being efficient with our energy in terms of decision making and what to do first.
Yeah, I mean, so if you look at new housing, obviously the government's put a lot in place around the requirements there and the NZEB requirements. So if you're buying a new build, it's essentially got to be a kind of an A2 rating to begin with. So you're starting off obviously from a very good place. And there's the requirements there have been growing, even more recent Part L requirements, where there's got to be the facility within houses now for electric vehicle charging points, whether the charging points are there, the infrastructure has to be in the background to enable it. That kind of thing is all very progressive. So from the new build side, if you look at the legislation from two or three iterations ago, back into the 90s or the early noughties, we've come a long way in that regard. But if people are looking to buy secondhand houses, of which most people do, there is certainly a number of things to watch out for. It's something that we're going to be close to bringing actually to the consumer as well, on top of the platform that we have as it is to enable them to see what are the running costs going to be of a house that they might look to buy, what might it cost to bring that house to an efficient rating, a B rating, where you can maybe get a green mortgage or that kind of thing. There are, I would say, challenges in the marketplace in that regard of the transparency around the ratings that are attached to houses when they are listed for sale. We know we've got progress made in that obviously you have to have a B or rating with a house for sale and for rent now, but it is important for the homeowner to be diligent in trying to research that too. One of the other things in terms of the benefit of the retrofit that people often overlook is, yes, it costs quite a bit to retrofit the house, but if you look at the future sale value of the house,
definitely,
you know, you would have seen that obviously, I guess
and running costs as well, and like it's all stuff that goes into your ad, you know, like it gives you a better product to sell when you retrofit. It gives them much better. It's like this house has been gone through twice, you know, like everything is really good in here.
Yeah, it's like the car that's just gotten the NCC or just gotten the new tires before you buy it. There's more value to that. So, you know, if you're investing €20,000, €15,000 in retrofitting your house, it's not just burned money. You're going to save it back as we bring you through. You're going to save it back in a variety of instances, but also as we show you, we'll give you an estimate of what that will add to the value of the house. So, I mean, If I'm going to purchase a new house, I'm going to look at the energy rating and I'm going to look at it and I'm going to value house A, which is a B rated house, much more than house B, which might be a C rated house. So you're going to take into consideration the ratings. So you have to bear that in mind as the homeowner as well, if you're looking to undertake work, that there is future value in what you're doing. But I think like one of the online property agents came out with a publication recently where they outlined that probably the most important factor people are looking at now when buying a house is the energy rating. I think it was 72% of respondents stated in a survey found that people are looking for the energy rating first. I guess what's happened over the last 18 months of the war in Ukraine has brought that more in focus with the rising energy costs. But at the same time, I think it's here to stay, where people are more
conscious. Yeah, people have realised now that there are massive ways to save on your bills, like long term, because it's only going to get more expensive.
That's something you're finding, Laura, on the ground.
Yeah, from the renter point of view, I like to make sure that I do a quick calculation on every property so people know what they're getting into. Like if you're renting somewhere for 18 months and you set your budget, a lot of people aren't taking into account like what it's going to cost to run that property. And then when we're selling, you have to put up your energy and all that on it anyway. But what we like to, like what they don't normally tell you, and we comb the buildings for it, is anything that's energy efficient, like if there's solar panels on the roof, even allotments, like things like that people can take advantage of. We put all of that into the ad, because for me that's way more juicier and weightier, and someone who is a much considered buyer and not necessarily a landlord will find that property more attractive, because they'll be like, there's a much more of a value to it when they see some efficiency in there.
Laura, you're senior hurling at the moment. Can you bring us back? Just basics in
I've
DIY.
Never heard that before.
No, but you're at a different level. But is there some easy wins for a DIYer, a starter, a rookie like myself?
Junior
that,
B.
A junior B, if I was lucky, Pat.
I don't even know what that is. Oh my God.
Way down the levels. But I suppose we're looking for easy wins for DIYers. Yeah.
I think the first thing that you can do is make sure that your home is sealed. I think that's a massive thing. And do it in summer. Don't wait till you're absolutely frozen in kind of like up to close to December. Because if you do find you need a repair, it's much more expensive then. That's when it's peak season. It's like getting your hair blow dried on like Christmas Eve. Like it's not happening, hon. Do you know what I mean? So like...
Speaking of hair.
Do you know?
I get
so,
that one.
I was going to say you probably know this. From
you're left behind there, Pat.
So things that you can do is like check like draft proofing on windows those doors internally. One of the biggest things that it doesn't make a massive aesthetic difference, but people always overlook it, is learning how your home is heated. Like Gaff, our Decor Galore has a full section on water systems, just basic, just touches on it. It doesn't need to teach you to be a plumber. So you start to understand how heating works and things like that, and knowing how to, you know, there are people like close all the doors and then they don't turn down thermostats, and then nobody knows what the TRV, which is the little valve on the edge of the radiator, they don't know what the numbers mean. You know what I mean? They don't know that you should never go past three, or your heating's just going to be like that the whole time. You know, you go past three, I can tell.
I
can tell. You think that when you go up to five, it heats up faster.
100%.
Don't do it.
Oh, no.
No, because that's just calling to your thermostat the whole time, being like, okay, I'm 20 degrees. And then if you've busted up, then the boiler's trying to get it really, really hot. It takes longer and it costs you more money. But it's things like that that people don't understand. That is DIY. Learning how to do your home. Siliconing bath, the regrouting tiles can change the look of a bathroom. I know now a lot of DIY is getting into like changing something visually within like 10 minutes and painting everything. But you have to think the longevity of that. Like paint, repainting floor tiles, you've got to be really careful what you're using. Like it's not, and people always say to me, like, we'd love to see more like visual transform tips. I don't do them because I don't believe in a lot of them. I don't believe in covering things in plastic and, you know, vinyling everything because it doesn't last long term. You're much better off sanding something back, painting it, reinforcing it, putting back in the integrity. So like little jobs, paint is the most sustainable job that you can do, is painting, especially if you look for things that are low toxic kind of paints. And if you know how to paint well, like you use paints in your kitchen and your bathroom that are designed for kitchen and bathroom. So you only paint once. If you learn what tools you need, like I personally paint with a massive roller so I can just go the whole way across. A lot of friends will send me pictures being like, it's just all marks on my wall. And I'm like, it's because you didn't do like a W or a V. That's all in Decor Galore as well.
Okay.
Painting is very sustainable because it gives you an instant update, but it's not doing that much harm and it can last for a long time. So that's a great like one to do. I also think as well, getting to know your home and what it needs to do, like what is she doing for you? How do you live and move through her? And then start your repairs from there. I keep a calendar like for work, for when I do inspections. Some jobs you just don't do in the summer and some jobs you don't do in the winter. It's usually like peak and cost and stuff, but like painting on the hottest summer day, people are like, oh, it is a gorgeous day, I think I'll paint.
Yeah.
It's like, hon, that's going to dry like unevenly. And if it's a windy day and you have your doors open, like dust can come in and stick to the wet paint. You know, you, there's things you can kind of map out so you don't have to do it all at once.
Yeah. And then when it comes to hiring professionals, I'd put it to both of you, you know, the, what's your thought process when it comes to hiring a pro?
I always say anything behind the wall is none of your business unless you've got training in it, right?
Okay.
There's a reason, like if you said to a plumber or electrician, like, I could totally do that. There's a reason they have spent years. It's down to danger and safety and lasting a long time. So I think, I just think that, like, you should... I would always read up on the job, walk around the job and think, okay, I could do that or I could do a third of that. And then I'll get three quotes. You know, like there's a way to go about it. Talk about what's being done in the job. Don't just go in blind saying, I'm going to get someone else to do this. Because there's attitude and there's accessibility. Sometimes people have an attitude where they want to do it. And other times people do not want to do it, but they have access to an app. You know, so it just depends. But there's stuff you shouldn't do. If it's not on loads of YouTubes with really kind of like solid people who have credentials, when people come on and they say, I'm, you know, Mary, I've been a builder for 20 years and I'm going to teach you how to fix this thing. Listen to her. Don't listen to, you know, I'm John, I'm 17 and I'm going to show you how to, like, where's John's credentials and experience, you know?
The other problem as well, on Instagram, everyone thinks that's real time. It's actually sped up by about 2 days.
Yeah.
So you look at the project, you think, oh, geez, I can have a crack at that.
Yeah.
And you realise, oh, like, I'm at this 2 days.
I think the other point you touched on there, Laura, which is get three quotes.
Yeah.
I think what we would see certainly in the retrofit space is, and it's not. Look, it was in the Oireachtas committee a couple of weeks ago. The SEI were in responding to questions around it, around pricing and, you know, what's the transparency. But the, you know, there is a risk of your cousin used X to do this. So you ring them up and you're in their hands and that's it. And I would say definitely what we would see is it is worth, you know, talking to multiple potential contractors who can do the work. If you're going to that space, as you say, behind the wall where you have to have the expert, if you're looking to get grants and that kind of thing,
definitely
is try and get a bit of, not necessarily competition, but comparison across the market. And, you know, again, it comes back to trying to inform yourself as to what you should expect, what might be reasonable, and don't just leave yourself in the hands of one person because you heard of them from X or whatever.
like date before you marry. Do you know that kind of way? So like, I think when you're doing it, they could all come back with the job being 500 quid. Mm. But one guy will be like, I prefer to do this. And he or she might mention like an aspect of the job that you're like, oh, no one else mentioned that. Mm. It's you're just learning more about what they're about to do
and
for you.
It's very easy as well in that sense, if you are trying to do it, not just from a cost or an increased comfort. If you're trying to do it from a sustainability perspective, you're trying to get the most sustainable material, ask them. Put the ball in the contractor's court and ask them what their view is from a sustainability aspect, what type of material they like to use and why, and do they have any interest in that space? If you're looking to do it from that, in that regard, you need to ask and put the pressure on them, I would say, a little bit.
In terms of crystal ball, the pod is on the future of sustainability. Where would you like to see us in 5-10 years' time in terms of sustainability? What would you like to see has improved, got better, that we're more conscious of?
Consumption going down from the point of view of social media, like I think I would love to see it being frowned upon that someone's like, I got a new thing, and no one's going, you've had 20 new things this week. Mm. Why are you still getting new things? And brands loving that. I'd love if it was like, because they say a fish rots from the head down, right? I'd love if the head got a bit prettier and put a bit of lipstick on. So I'd like to know that when we are going out, like laws and there's more like the consumer, like they have the consumer's back a bit more, because now it's all down to the consumer and the consumer having to do better with absolutely no knowledge, and then people that have the knowledge, like governments and things like that, aren't kind of like coming in as much to help us. And then I also think like people just putting a focus on the after they experience something, even if they're doing a DIY job, like where's the waste, where's this going, or when they're buying stuff. I'd love to just see a more conscious kind of consumption, basically. Yeah.
And for you, David?
Yeah, I think the same. I think very much the kind of social dynamic around it as well is, you know, we are a culture where we can poke fun at each other easily in this country, naturally.
Yeah,
but I think like where people are trying to be conscientious and trying to make good choices, it should be clearly welcomed. And I think education will help with that. And as we cycle through generations, I think that will help with that. But I think if you're looking at what we do on our side is we try and bring a kind of commercial or monetary aspect to it, of course, and try and outline to you how you can save. But as you said earlier, there's a benefit to doing something sustainable as well, that you feel probably like more emotionally, that you have an attachment to what you've done because you feel there's some good in it. And I would say we've all got to try and embrace that as much as we can. And then socially, you know, to be encouraging people for that, as opposed to...
Yeah, and I think, look, for us as a society, it'd be great to have younger people coming through now into the trades, learning from like some Laura, and, you know, picking up on the platforms today what you're doing. Mm. And then it's obviously, we're conscious of the fact we've got to provide material to the market that is sustainable and also helps the market, but certainly getting younger people involved and leaving school and coming into the trades.
I know it from just around our house. There's, you know, under 12s and that, but there is a bit of sustainability anxiety out there, you know, with the younger generation that probably have had heard all. But is it right to think that we're on the turn, we're in control, or where do you sit on that?
Kind of. The problem is we now consume digitally faster than ever. So how does your mind suddenly go from dopamine like that to wanting to spend a long time on something? So like it is, I do think that the next generations coming up will have a bit more of a digital detox, hopefully, and that will bring people back into craft and trades and things like that. Because like, there are things that bring, it's like an incredible way to spend your time, either professionally or on your off time, like making something and creating something. So I do hope that, because it's a lot of like Gen Zers that I know is all online, you know, everything, their jobs, their learning, their downtime is all online. Mm. And then getting, as someone who would always like love to use my hands and like get like make clothes or like make furniture or whatever, I do feel like I hope that that generation comes into that, you know.
I think like one thing to maybe add on that, are we making a turn? I think if you look at the actual, you know, energy consumption, fossil fuel production side of things, you can certainly see that the electrification side, the strategy around that and creating, you know, electricity through wind, through solar, through hydro, that kind of side of what the national legislation is aiming at and what the European legislation is aiming at is certainly on the up. You can see, you know, you can track it every day. You can see what percentage of the energy consumption in Ireland is coming from renewable sources. And ultimately that will lead to, we can't lose faith that that will actually lead to a reduction in the cost of, you know, utilizing energy and electricity, because if we're able to produce it from natural sources like that, it is going to help. Now, we've a huge challenge clearly, but there are definitely things that I've seen as I've been growing up and just understanding more about the market, where we are making the right, as society, making the right strides.
Absolutely. Great to hear. A fascinating chat. Thank you so much, David and Laura. We've really enjoyed having you on.
Absolutely.
Under Construction. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
This is great.
Okay, Dolly, as you know, every episode we bring in a new supplier to put a bit of spotlight on. So this week, our supplier spotlight is going on Dulux Paints, and we're lucky to be joined by the Managing Director of Ireland, Mr. Seamus O'Donoghue. Seamus, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Donoghue. Great to be here.
Great to have you on.
Great to get a chance to wear the jersey.
Exactly. You're fully togged out.
The only down point is you have a place in Cork, and he's from Cork, and he loves Cork.
Oh, we get to the Cork link in a
minute. He loves Cork, and everything is Cork that he loves. But anyway, Seamus, look, thanks a million for coming on. Will you tell us a bit about yourself, and then give us a bit of info back on Dulux.
Sure. I'll start with just a quick overview on Dulux. I suppose we're the largest... I would say the oldest paint manufacturer in the country, been making paint in Cork since 1885. So, for 140 years at this stage on the Commons Road, you probably pass by it regularly,
absolutely,
know where it is.
On the way back in on Old Limerick.
Generations have worked there. Yeah, started by Harrington Brothers in 1885. They actually lived in that house where the Montanati is.
Wow.
Different ownerships then, you know, over the years. HGW, they supplied the painting to Henry Ford plant in Cork at one stage, was interesting. ICI took it over, and then in 2008 it was bought by AkzoNobel. So we're very much part of AkzoNobel now. I suppose it's a good thing on the one hand, being part of AkzoNobel and the capability that they have and global innovation, and then having the autonomy of having our own plant in Cork and Ireland. So it's a good blend of having Dulux Paints, but as part of then the larger business. And I suppose our brands and our people are the heartbeat of the business and have been. A lot of people will know the brands, thankfully, whether it's Dulux, Dulux Weathershield, Cuprinol, Armstead, all of those brands. Brands of choice, trusted brands, and we don't take that for granted. We invest a lot in our brands every year, and we work really hard in that part of it. And in terms of the people, 130 people overall in the business in Ireland, between the manufacturing plant in Cork, distribution centres in Cork and Dublin, and obviously the sales and commercial team throughout the country. And, you know, when you look at actually, you talk about Cork, there for that length of time, like there's generations of people that have worked in the business in Cork, second, third generation, different sports people involved with Cork, whether it's GAA, soccer, hurling connections. It really is an institution there, you know, working in the paint factory. Mm. Yeah, I can even do the Cork accent for you if you want. But, it really, we get an energy from it, though, of people having, you know, there's great engagement. People stay with us as well. Real pride in working for the business. So, real people business in that regard. In terms of myself, I joined in 2009. I was, keep going with the Cork team now, actually. I worked for Dairy Gold, actually, Consumer Foods. I was sales director for Dairy Gold Consumer Foods for a long number of years. But the job came up in Dulux and, kind of immediately turned my head because my background, actually, I was born, actually raised in a hardware and paint store. The independent store in Granard, County Longford. So, I suppose, you know, growing up, you worked in the shop, that's what you did. Dulux were only one of a number of suppliers, but like there was trades lads in all the time. There was a bit of crack always in the shop. You learned all the basics of good customer service and whether it was, the plumbers or Sparkies or whatever, the painters, decorators were in regular. It was a great sounding. So, you know, it was a natural fit for me. I know coming from food industry, but it was a natural fit when the potential to join Dulux. So,
And the changes then in the industry since 2000, certainly since you came in 2009, have been dramatic, in particular around the whole sustainability piece.
It's a huge element of what AkzoNobel do and what we have to now do. If I look at our overall purpose, and it's around people, planet, paint. Actually, it sounds very much like Chadwick's Grafton purpose in terms of sustainability. So, the obvious piece is about reducing carbon emissions. So, look, we have a target there to reduce them by 50% by 2030. So, important piece, I suppose, is getting all of that validated. Though, concern really in the business around is a lot of greenwashing happening. So, we need to have targets that you know, we can achieve. If you look at our packaging, 50% of it was 30. Now 50% is recycled packaging. That keeps increasing. So a number of things like that are happening. But if you look at our industry, I suppose, paint industry, there was a lot of challenges in it in terms of sustainability. Like, there was lead in paint till not that long ago. You know, there's solvents, a lot of solvents in our products. But the plant now, as we are in Cork, so the plant is solvent-free. So water-based plant only. You know, we still sell a certain amount of solvent-based product, but concentrated in other plants. If I look at sustainability then in terms of what it means for the tradesman out there, it's really about the move away from solvents into water over time. You know, and the trades labs have loved the solvent product, and they've been slower to move to water-based because, you know, there's concerns about, you know, whether it was drying or, you know, about the application or the durability afterwards in terms of the finish. But, you know, that move is on. It's driven by regulation and by innovation. So the regulation piece is ensuring that we have to do this. And then the water-based products have gotten significantly better. And yeah, we're about to launch Aquamax with you, Pat, with Chadwicks and nationally in about 3 weeks' time. So it's our newest innovation in water-based, and it's just as good as our solvent satinwood, which is the best seller in the country. So we're making the move, and it'll transition over time. So,
Seamus, can you give us a bit more information around trends and what's happening in the market, please?
Yeah, well, in terms of trends and colours, Pat, you know, neutrals are still the most popular. I suppose the past few years it's been all about grey or shades of grey. But I think what we're finding now is, you know, we're seeing a change in terms of those neutrals, warmer neutrals becoming more popular. And we tend, you know, I think that'll continue. I think another trend is that people get more confident with colour. So you're seeing a lot of, so it's what our colour team call dark kind of inky colours. So, you know, deep blues, deep greens, you know, warm, saturated, rich colours. And again, I think you're going to see a lot more of that over the next while. You know, but colours keep changing and the trends keep changing. So I think in terms of understanding the world of colour is what we do. You know, and a big part of that is in the Julix Academy in Cork. You know, and for us, the Academy is about, I think, enhancing the capability of everyone in the trade, not just on colour per se. You know, also on you know, application methods, specification, all of that. And I know that the Chadwicks team were there in the last couple of weeks, so you know, great to see the team there. And the following day was full with decorators there on an application course. So yeah, big part of continued learning.
Very good.
And recently, a number of years ago, you might remember this, you did a big project down in Mitchelstown, I'm sure it was, where all the exterior buildings all painted.
Yeah. Yeah, when Barack Obama visits Mullingarroll as well. Wow. We took the opportunity literally to paint all of the team and the people of Mullingarroll to paint the town.
Brilliant.
Literally to paint the town, whatever colours they wanted. So yeah, a lot of initiatives like that have gone on since then in terms of streetscapes and helping with colour choice. You know, and when I look at a number of the things that, you know, that we offer to the lads out there to trade, is one of the things is specification. So yeah, technical specification in terms of what product to use, finish, all that, but the colour piece, so colour specification, really, really helping with that.
And you have an app for that.
We've an app for that. You know, we have our Trade Expert app, which gives you a number of things. So I'd say to any of the lads who are out there who haven't downloaded the app, download the Julix Trade Expert app. You know, it's going to give you help with product. We've got the visualizer on there. I heard you in previous episodes talking about your inability to pick colour and all of that. You need our you need the visualizer.
I've seen that, and exactly that, being able to tell the room apart and actually visualize it and see yourself in it makes some difference, as opposed to a little square in a wall sample that I'm not the best at.
Yeah. Well, look, it's just great to be able to get that visual. I'd recommend to anyone that you follow through, get your tester afterwards. But yeah, I mean, men, I know there's a sign up in a couple of stores around the country that men aren't allowed to choose colour without a note from their wife, you know, and you might just fall into that.
I absolutely
category,
do. Dunica. I definitely
so,
do.
So visualizer is your solution. Yeah. But from the tradesman perspective, the visualizer is brilliant, because you're walking in, people are choosing in the moment, and you can go, well, yeah, have a look. So even it's a sense of professionalism for the trade person as well, being able to have the various tools, have the specification option available as well.
Seamus, how much are you working with them, the tradesmen and women, and kind of hearing their, obviously there's policy forces, different things, but also hearing what they're seeing out in the, you know, the field?
Well, it's a huge part of what we do. Listening to end users, whether they're consumers who are DIY, or listening to the trade guys in terms of, because how else can you refine what you do for them? So we are in direct contact with a significant portion of the decorators now. It's about 5,500 decorators in Ireland, including generalists, everything else. So we are in contact with a lot of them, you know, and obviously amending what we do in terms of the product offering, but also the service offering that the guys need, and particularly around that digital piece, specification, and even just accreditations on product. You need that for certain for certain companies at this stage. You need to bring that level of certification. So all of that's available direct, but all of that's available through the app piece as well, you know.
And I mentioned a piece around recycling, and we will have listeners on. Like, if I have tins of paint in the shed, half tins, a quarter tins, what advice like would you give those people who are...
Well, first and foremost, I think the place to start is to look to buy the right amount of paint. You know, as a retailer, whether you want to hear that, that's what you need to do. What do I need? And work that out. And we've got advice for that on our websites or on the app or wherever. So that's the best place to start. You know, there are, you can donate product afterwards. You can recycle among family and friends. But you can also, and this is where the trade are really good, like the trade guys use every bit of product that they get. You know, they reuse in the next project, all of that. And fully wiped out and cleaned, all those cans can be recycled. So we need to move the public into that same space, as opposed to holding cans of paint to the back of the house forever that are rarely ever used. Reuse, recycle relatively quickly. But look, the trade guys are on this. They know this. They're actually really good.
They're probably ahead. Are they, Seamus, in terms of?
Well ahead. Well ahead. I mean, they're really, really good at that in terms of finishing out cans. You know, on a lot of the bigger projects now, it's part of what you do. You know, part of the agreement is that you take that packaging back and it's fully recyclable.
And the plan for the business then over the next number of years, what have Dulux or Akzo Nobel got planned for you guys?
Well, I'd say to you about the plant having moved to fully water-based. So for Akzo over creating these specialist plants. So, you know, Cork was now a water-based specialist plant. So we're now exporting more, which is great for the foundations of the business, gives us that solid base, exporting into the UK and exporting also into Europe, premium water-based products. So that's brilliant and gives us that foundation piece. You know, and we're still growing. I mean, we're adding to the business. We have full autonomy here in terms of how we go to market with our brands. And, you know, a lot of business that are aligned in globally are very much executing the plans of the global business within market. Thankfully, we're able to adjust to what the market needs here, particularly for trade, with having our own plant. So everything's going to be, you know, focused on how we manage and deal with the local market, Pat. So that's great. And having that foundation, it's Cork, makes that happen.
It must be something you're really proud of, though. Like, incredible business with unbelievable roots and tradition and history. It's a brilliant story.
It is a brilliant story. And I suppose that's why I referenced that I jumped at the opportunity to join in 2009, not just because of my background, but yeah, brilliant brands. And it's only when I got in and got the sense of the people and the pride that was there. And for me, as you know, responsible for the businesses in Ireland, it's much easier when you've got such an engaged group of people who have a real pride. I mean, there's a wearing of the badge of the team, not just the team of Cork, it's right throughout the country. Real pride in the team. They love working for the business. It is an enjoyable business, I would say. It's an enjoyable industry. I've come from a food industry. You know, this industry is much more people-based. It's about relationships with people. You know, you give a good service, you get that loyalty back. You can, trust has to be earned, like in any business. Yeah. But, you know, we've earned trust over a long period of time and, you know, it's been great. So, yeah, the pride does really come true. If you talk to any of my colleagues, I think you'd probably get that.
But when you have three generations as well, there's an onus on you to serve it right in your time, isn't it? From me, like there's a bit of pressure.
Yeah. Well, we're only here in the role for a period of time. You know, you're passing on. That's
He's talking about the first one makes it, second one maintains it, third one loses it. That's what he's saying.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to say it.
we've gone past that cycle.
Okay, very good.
We've gone past that cycle.
What's important to it? Fills it back up.
Yeah, matches it up. Yeah, very good. So, and then I noticed, somebody, again, we go back to the social media piece, you do have a number of interior designers and decorators that you use to, I suppose, promote the brands. What's the ticket behind that? Or what do you get? Are you picking much business back up from that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people just want help, Pat, with the whole inspiration piece. I mean, they have their own sources of inspiration, but sometimes they just want that validated. Other times are going, you know, the people will just go, you know, what's popular. So people are at different ends of the spectrum in terms of what they want. So that service is there for DIYers, and but it's also there then for the trade and decorators as well, because it's all about conversion. So if somebody's thinking about doing the house and they go, they buy, they have a look, you were talking about it before, and then they go get a load of tests and it just becomes too much and they move on. The sun starts to shine and they go and do something else. So you need to convert at the time when somebody's interested. It's all about conversion, and someone who knows what they're talking about in terms of colour helps that conversion path. That's really what it's about.
And the trend of colour in the garden, the outdoor, that's still a big thing.
It is. It's still growing. It's plateaued a little bit this year, but I think that's because literally everything was painted. But the cycle will come back because so much stuff was painted in the garden. It's all about colour in the garden. You know, an awful lot of spaces now look an awful lot better than they did prior to COVID. You know, and that's what we're all about, inspiring beautiful living spaces. That's the tagline in for you, Pat.
There you go.
Listen, thanks very much for that. Look, thanks again for coming in. As I said, Dunnigan's touched on it. Dulux is a fantastic story, particularly in the Irish arm of it. And I will say, it kills me. It's great that it is down in Cork, and it stays in Ireland. We keep manufacturing, and you're doing a great job. So well done, Dunnigan.
Yeah, great stuff. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for the time, lads. Appreciate it.
The Under Construction podcast is produced by the podcast studios for Chadwicks, Ireland's leading building merchant company, where you can choose from the best products and expert advice to get the job done. Drop into any of your local Chadwicks stores nationwide or visit us online at chadwicks.ie.